Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Penis man? Is that you? Never thought I'd see you again.
Welcome to Lore Boys, the podcast where if you die during this podcast, you never get to see the next one. And every episode gets harder than the last. And this is the hardest one yet. It's our roguelike episode where we talk about the history of roguelike games and how they came to be. My name is James Miller, and I am joined with...
I'm Ethan Palmer. Once Pete's done introducing himself, I do have a question, though.
Okay.
My name's Peter O'Donohue. Hello, everybody. It's the number one fake history podcast on the internet, as far as we're concerned. I have a question as well, so I'll let Ethan go first, and we'll see if we had the same question.
Is roguelike the Dark Souls of game genres?
That's a pretty good... What's your question, Pete?
Because you said this is the podcast where if you die, you don't get to hear the next one. And I'm like, that doesn't have anything to do with the game. That's just a grim fact.
That's every podcast, really.
Grim fact about life.
This episode, we're gonna go through like the what made roguelikes, like the genre. And then at the end, there is like a list of basically different categories. And depending on how much each game lives up to that category, the more of a roguelike it is.
Oh, it's like booze. It's like, oh yeah, that's, don't worry. That's like just the white wine of roguelikes. That's only 14-15% roguelike.
A lot of folks think roguelike is like just because you're playing like a rogue where you're like sneaking around and you like kill stuff. And if you die, then you have to start over again. But that's not really why. There was a game called Rogue like way back in the 80s.
I'll just go out on a limb here. I don't like to get political, but the people who think that are dumb. So
it's like a 40-year-old genre at this point, and a lot of people have kind of lost the lead on where it came from, I guess.
Is Dark Souls a roguelike?
It would have roguelike elements, and it's always up to you. There's like X amount of things it has to live up to, and it could be a roguelike or it could be a roguelite if you feel like it's not up to enough.
Is Super Mario Brothers a roguelike?
So they say that even if you like have every element of a roguelike, it doesn't mean you even are a roguelike. So it's so up to the...
it's like roguelikes are like a religion. Which is like a bunch of disparate rules. It's just like, and then these apply, but only on this day of the week.
That's it. Yeah, only when we want them to.
Exactly. Depending on who you ask, you've got the Lutheran roguelikes, and then you've got...
the Protestant roguelikes and the Puritan roguelikes. And...
It's pretty great.
The Quakers left roguelike for the New World.
Right. They used to believe in roguelikes, but then when Jesus came, they were like, well, that's not a roguelike anymore. So any roguelike with Jesus in it is not canon for the Jews.
I only know of one. It's probably blasphemous.
Oh, true. That's, wow, there actually is one with actual canon Catholicism in it.
Yeah, so... There's like a lot of games that could be considered roguelikes. What are some roguelikes that you guys like today?
VeggieTales, the roguelike.
That's a good one.
Okay, so I was thinking about this before we started the show. Like, is Hades one? We also said, is Hollow Knight one? Now I don't know anymore.
They can be, and we're going to go through all the elements at the end of what makes a roguelike according to a conference in 2008 of game developers. They set up this scale called the... It's the Berlin interpretation of roguelikes.
Okay.
Well, thank God that they spent time doing that.
Yeah. What is it? A chess opening or something? Like the Berlin interpretation?
Well, we'll get to it. But right now, on a big grand scale, I want to know what kind of roguelikes you guys are into, just so we can come back to
it. I'm locking in Hollow Knight. So if it's wrong and it's not a roguelike, you can call me an idiot at the end of the episode.
None of it's wrong. It's all up to our interpretation.
I'm ready to be wrong.
I would say Prey Moon Crash, which is currently like my favorite piece of software, is a roguelike. And I played Hades for 3.5 hours straight and never touched it again. It's also fucking fantastic, but I'll lock in Prey Moon Crash.
Nice.
If anything could be a roguelike, then I'm going to say I like a nice Greek salad with some feta. You know, that's my favorite roguelike.
I had some last night, actually. It was very good.
Did you have it in the shower?
I did not. I ordered it. A guy brought it to my front door. He made it for me, presumably in his own shower.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Well, I should hope so. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so some roguelikes that you guys might have heard of, Binding of Isaac, Hades, Spelunky, Rogue Legacy, Enter the Gungeon, Dead Cells, Hollow Knight. There's like a ton of them. Even Diablo in some ways can be considered a roguelike or roguelite. But where did the genre come from and what makes up a roguelike? So there's 5 canon games for like the history of roguelikes that the scale that they developed in the Berlin, it was based upon.
Okay.
Berlin or East Berlin? Which side of the Iron Curtain did they decide roguelike?
Must have been West, right?
This is in 2008, so the curtain had fallen at this point.
Curtains go up, I think.
Well, I don't know, dude. I didn't look up the politics.
I mean, it depends, because like the end of a show, the end of a play, if the curtain comes down, right?
Yeah, but it was like, I don't know.
But if the Cold War was a stage play, then the end of it would have ended with a curtain call, right? I don't know.
I wanted to talk about fun games, not depressing politics.
But it's all up to interpretation.
Okay, but yeah. I mean, to this point, I'm a little confused because you said it started in the 80s, but we're in 2008 right now. So
you guys got to let me finish a sentence and it will make sense.
Is there a way that we could still cut you off before you finish the sentence and get the information that we want?
We're going to get there really, really fast. Okay. So the canon games are roguelikes. So there's Adam, which is ADOM, Ancient Domains of Mystery, Angband, ANGBAND, Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup, NetHack, and of course Rogue. And these games, they were started in like the 80s, moving into the late 90s, even in the early 2000s. And in 2008, there was a developers conference, and they wanted a more narrow definition of roguelike. And because variations on Rogue introduced a ton of new games. And at the International Roguelike Development Conference in 2008, held in Berlin, Germany players and developers established a definition for roguelikes known as the Berlin Interpretation. So it has a bunch of high value and low value factors, basing these lists on 5 canon games. So this was based on Adam, Angband, Lindley's Dungeon Crawl, NetHack, and Rogue, which we're going to talk about all of those. And then we'll go over what makes up a roguelike. If you guys want to go through what makes a roguelike first, we could do that.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
You just told me it was going to be at the end of the episode, so I wanted to ask a bunch of questions about it at the beginning of the episode to get on your nerves.
No, we'll get there. We'll get there. So basically, we're just going to talk about the games. And then at the end, we can go over the list and see how it measures up to something like Hollow Knight or Spelunky or whatever you guys are interested
in. We'll do our own Bechdel test, basically.
Yeah. Cool. We can even just put real life through it and see how roguelike real life is if we want.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. So the interpretation was designed to determine how roguelike a game is. A missing factor does not eliminate the game from being a roguelike, and possessing the features make a game, like just because it has the features doesn't make it roguelike either. So John Harris of Game Set Watch was the one who rated most of these. So Dungeon Crawl, Lindley's Dungeon Crawl and NetHack had 57.5 out of 60, where like Toe Jam and Earl and Diablo had like 30 out of 60.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like they have a way of measuring it just to see how much it's like the original Rogue. Have you guys played the original Rogue?
No, I have no idea what we're talking about. You sent me
'70s.
You sent me a very cryptic screenshot during work today, and I was like, cool.
Yeah. So these old games, like they're all like ASCII exploration games, like heavily based on D&D. So, like, a roguelike really felt a lot more like an RPG back then than anything else.
Because it looks like Submarine Radar, what you showed us in chat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so before Rogue, pre-Rogue, I guess, there was, like, no This game didn't have direct impact on Rogue's creation, but there was Play-Doh Dungeon Crawlers, Pettit 5 in 1975, D&D, or the Game of Dungeons, 1975, which is just an adaptation of Dungeons & Dragons into games.
Okay.
They were a lot of like text-based stuff with like 40 to 50 rooms. Have you guys played any text-based stuff from back in the day, like Zork or anything?
Yeah, when you open a GOG account, you get a couple, like, for free, and there's a couple other free ones that are just, like, on GOG that you can download. They are beyond my level of comprehension. I have been spoiled by the use of my eyes on graphics and shit, so I can't do the text-based adventure game at all.
Have you tried any, Ethan?
None from, like, back then. I've played, like, a few, and I'm trying to remember their names now, but, like, there was always some, like, online sites. Not like Newgrounds, but there were sites like Newgrounds that would let you just do these flash ones. And I remember we would do, or not flash ones, but text-based ones. And I remember we would play them during my 11th grade computer science class, because I finished all the homework in the first like month and a half, and I had just had nothing to do for 3 months.
Nice. We played Tron, the bike game, too, in that class. I remember that was fun.
I actually did finish one once. There is a full text-based adventure fantasy game within Fallout 3, I think, that you can find and play on one of those retro-ass, like, atomic PCs. So it's like Grognak the Barbarian or something, and you can play through that entire game. Nice. So I beat Grognak within Fallout 3.
There's one that's out nowadays. Someone made an AI that they fed a bunch of these games into, and it's based in Python, and you can just write whatever you want, and it will react to you. So, like, my friend was playing one, and he's like, I punched the ground, and it opened a black hole and swallowed everything up. And then the computer actually describes the black hole and how you pass out within it and stuff. I think it's called Adventure, with a capital exclamation mark after, I mean. Not a capital.
Capital A. Yeah, so you said adventure, but what you really meant was adventure. Because you did a question mark, not an exclamation point.
Yeah. So these games, these types of games are what kind of influenced it. There's Will Crowther's and Don Wood's Colossal Cave Adventure in 1977. Have you guys heard of anything about that?
It sounds like the made-up golf game from The Simpsons. Lee Harvey's Putting Challenge or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I dropped a picture into Boys Chat just so you guys can see. It's basically like MS Paint up top and then like text-based underneath.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It looks like... if anybody, I know like Fragile Shark had been playing Wasteland 3. Wasteland 1 came out like 40 years ago, and it looks a lot like that as well.
Yeah.
I like it. The screenshot you sent us, there's the guy hits a roadblock because he doesn't know how to spell light. He writes lit. He's trying to say light lamp, but he writes lit lamp.
Yeah.
And I guess that's just like end of your progression if you don't know how to spell light.
Yeah, it must have been tough like to get the right words and stuff like that. Yeah, it's based on, this is like a kind of a wacky game. It has none of the normal mechanical trappings of a roguelike other than permadeath. So when you die, it flips. You have to start over again.
Mm-hmm.
But this established the theme and the tone and the adventure of an underground cave system. There's funny ways to die. Like you can come around a corner and a little dwarf walks around a corner, saw you and throw a little axe at you. And then you either die or it missed and cursed and run it away. And cute little things like that.
Nice.
Yeah. Next up is Beneath Apple Manor. And this is in 1978.
What are you doing in Steve Jobs' basement?
It sounds like a horror game, yeah.
It is that
Steve Jobs' house.
Yeah.
Just denim and turtlenecks as far as the eye can see.
You have to solve the turtleneck puzzle, yeah.
Yeah.
Wear turtleneck. Not a command. Iron turtleneck. No, that doesn't work either.
Yeah. Eat turtleneck. You eat the turtleneck. Like, oh, okay.
You eat the turtleneck. I never would have thought of that.
Make turtleneck soup.
Beneath Apple Manor is in 1978, and it's the first game to pull all the roguey bits together. It had a randomly generated dungeon up to 10 levels deep, so this is procedurally generated for the first time, which is really cool. And it's either shown in text or graphical tiles. And the graphical tiles is actually like way ahead of other games. I'll paste it over. Everything else ends up being like, oh, pardon me. I had to take off the push to talk to get it in there.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, Jamie is the host, and he's Jamie pulling up the clips all by his own today. Yeah. He is DJ and host.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So it's like a, what, oh, like yeah. a 15 by 10 grid or something like that, and you just have little tiles, and you have a little dude who's like squatting with a sword and a shield.
Yeah,
and then three bored looking slimes all around him.
aren't slimes always bored looking though?
No, the dungeon Dragon Quest ones are all very cute and very happy to try and kill you.
Yeah, so this one, this game, like, it's the first one with graphical tiles, which is huge because once we get to Rogue and the other games, like, they don't even have graphical tiles. So this is Apple had it all figured out, like, way ahead of time.
Clearly,
is Apple Manor? It sounds, I guess, just because it's in a house. I assumed it was a horror game, but it is very distinctly just another fantasy roguelike.
Yeah, it's fantasy. Like, okay. It's turn-based combat. So you go down. There's a fog of war, so you won't really see the room until you get through the next door and things like that. You have to explore rooms, open doors, collect items and treasure, battle monsters. And it's very D&D-esque where you have to... I think there's even dice rolls there. I see D11. Or maybe that's the grid that they're on. But I know...
Oh, like Battleship, yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
But either way, it is turn-based combat where you have to fight little slimes and you can attack, you can hit, you can miss. It's very much like D&D.
You can fall in love. It's just like real life, really.
Yeah. It had a MacGuffin, a golden apple, hidden somewhere beneath the manor. So that's what you're going
for. Okay. That makes sense.
This game didn't really catch on. It had all the makings to be Rogue, but the problem probably was because it was exclusive to Apple II in 1978. So not so many people had the computer, and then even fewer were playing the game.
Yeah. It was the 70s, let's be fair.
Yeah. Very much.
At least we have, well, roguelike, I guess, with the benefit of living in this current present, roguelike does sound better than Apple-like as far as like a genre of like repetitive fantasy games.
Yeah.
Think how different the world would be if it was called Apple-like, right?
Dude, I don't want to. It's too dark.
It could have, because this game is basically just as good as Rogue, if not better in some ways. And if it just would have caught on, then we might be calling them... jobbies or something like that. Who knows?
Job likes.
Yeah. Oh,
that's just those MMOs.
Yeah. It's true. So next up's Rogue. So Rogue, this is the game that made the term roguelike, and it inspired a lot of other games. It was probably inspired by this game on the Apple II, although they don't say it anywhere directly.
This happens like fairly frequently, though. Like, if you think about FPSs, you've got Wolfenstein is objectively first, but then you've got Doom, and then everything after that before it's a genre is a Doom clone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So instead of an Apple clone, you've got the roguelikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of a Wolf clone, they're Doom clones.
Yeah.
So I pulled up a photo for you guys. It is the one that I showed earlier, and this is what the map looks like in the game.
Not as refined as Escape from Steve Jobs Manor, I'll say.
No. It is ASCII art. Basically, you are the at sign. Percentage sign is like the next staircase. The hashtags are little hallways, and then the dashes and the lines, like vertical lines, are what makes up the rooms.
Now, I don't want to get political, but people in the 70s are clearly idiots, because the fact that the thing with color and graphics did not catch on, and what is just like two fists rolled across a keyboard was just like, yeah, man, this is the shit right here. Genre defining.
It's really hard to imagine how you get something like Hollow Knight or Enter the Gungeon or any of that stuff out of this, right? Like,
this is
what it's made for.
I guess just for the listeners who don't know what ASCII is, it's basically like they took a Word doc and drew everything in the game using only dashes and at symbols and other characters on a keyboard, basically.
Yeah. And then along the bottom, it has your level, your gold, your HP, how much strength you have, how much armor you have, and how much XP you have. So it's very much Dungeons and Dragons. It's like they had the concept there, but then they really just didn't give the graphics side any thought at all.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if I had to design a video game, I don't know how big the team that worked on Rogue was.
Two people.
I was going to guess, not very many, but like if I had to design a game, if it was you and me designing a game, James, it probably wouldn't be the prettiest thing out there. You know what I mean? Like, no. We could come up with a semi-decent idea and like have some semi-fun game mechanics, I'm sure, but like the graphics would be the thing that would absolutely hang us up. And if we didn't have a Pete to step in and be like, no, this is ugly, we'd probably be like, sure, ship it.
Yeah, I'll just like cut out pictures of Samus Aran with corn arms.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the draws to Rogue versus, let's say, the Apple version or even future roguelike games is that the file size was very small, and it could run on almost any computer. So, like, whoever doing their bank jobs could pretend to pull up a spreadsheet and it looks like this and just play Rogue.
You could for sure play this on a TI-84. Like 100%.
You could definitely play this in Excel.
I had
a very similar little RPG game in Excel at the last office job I had. I had just with like controls, and it was all ASCII as well, but you played as a happy face instead of
an at symbol.
Oh, I've played something like that.
Some would say that the happy face does make more sense, right?
Yes. I don't know if it changes to like a like pursed lip face and a frowny face as your HP goes down. I didn't play much of it, but you know.
I played one of the first RPG makers I had from Hamster, like a smiley face default game that it came with. So Rogue is in 1980. UC Santa Cruz students Glenn Wickman and Michael Toy teamed up to make a game that would randomize the maze layout and monster item locations in Colossal Cave Adventure. So they were just trying to build off of Colossal Cave Adventure. They also wanted their adventure to incorporate D&D, so Dungeons & Dragons, and popular 1970s text-based mainframe game Star Trek. Where you had to wipe out all the Klingon warships across the galaxy before time runs out.
All right, cool.
Yeah, so that's what they were into, and what this game is actually made on is a Unix programming library called Curses, and Curses just makes you able to make pictures with ASCII art instead of starting from the top left and having to draw it all out. You can just put it wherever you need to.
Okay.
So that's it was a text mode paint tool. And what's really cool, I guess the thing you're looking for in this is the Amulet of Yendor. That's the MacGuffin. But that just is a call to adventure, so you can go deeper and deeper into this dungeon. And every time you played, the levels, potions, scrolls, weapon, object positions would all be randomized. So even them who were making the games for themselves were experiencing it new for the first time ever. And the mazes, they didn't know how to get around them.
Yeah, people are going to get bored of all these dashes if we don't randomize them, right? Yeah. Replayability is a really big concern in 1980.
You've seen dash dash space 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 percentage space dash, but what about dash dash
you
percentage
can't
space?
Me anymore, old man.
Yeah,
kid in 1981.
Yeah. He's got his backwards hat on.
Yeah.
Not only was there like just a maze, there's also monster types, so you have to battle things by running into them.
Is the percentage sign in the image you showed us a monster?
Staircase, he said.
No, so all of the monster. Yeah, exactly. It's a staircase.
Oh, okay.
And all of the monsters are different letters of the alphabet. So there's 26 monster types.
You have to assassinate the vowels. They're the key targets.
Yeah, they're the leaders. They tell the consonants what to do. The consonants are lackeys.
Yeah. So, like, maybe you run into a G and you know it's a grunt, so, like, you could take that on at an early level. But if you see a D and it's a dragon, I'm just making these up because I didn't actually look up all the monster types.
Oh,
but
okay.
People had to know what the letters meant before running into them, or else you'd get into a lot of trouble.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, there'd be different scrolls and stuff you could pick up, but you couldn't... And potions, but you couldn't see what the potions did unless you had a scroll of identification. So there was kind of risk reward. If you were like low health and you could drink a potion, it might heal you or it might kill you. And
potion of corpse explosion.
Yeah. Yeah. Rogue has permadeath as a design choice. So this is really where roguelikes are starting to come from. So it makes each action by the player meaningful. So if you lose all your health, you got to start from scratch and a whole new maze.
Okay.
Yeah,
just like real life. I get it.
Yeah,
exactly.
At one point, some of the university students figured a way to make a save state, and the creators went and just reprogrammed the whole game so you couldn't have a save state anymore. No saving for you. You must die.
That's such a crybaby developer thing to do. Like, no, you're enjoying my game wrong. Stop it.
Like... yeah. So that's Rogue, and it really started. It started a wave of roguelikes. The next one that was really prominent was called Hack, eventually called NetHack.
I've actually heard of that game. I don't know anything about it, but I've heard the title.
Yeah, it still exists and it's still live. Like, people are still updating NetHack to this day. And they fixed it also. It is text-based, so like you have the pound signs and it looks like ASCII art. But you could also switch it out for actual pictures now.
You can also still buy Rogue on Steam for $3 Canadian if you're into it. I wanted to see if it was free, but it's available out there, guys. Show Rogue some 40-year-old love, why don't you?
Yeah. So NetHack was actually an attempt to recreate Rogue from memory, because the creator Jay Fenlinson, the creator of Hack, really wanted to play more Rogue, but he didn't have a copy of it anymore, and he couldn't just get it anywhere. So him and his high school friends just made a new copy.
Life before the internet, huh?
Yeah.
Played it at a friend's house one day, and then that friend moved away. He's like, "Well, I'm never seeing that video game again." Like, there goes that 5.5-inch floppy. Like,
and then they make it from scratch. Yeah. It's so cool.
Which is fucking wild. Yeah.
Well, no internet to distract you, right? No Twitch so to spend fun. Your time watching. Just like,
yeah,
yeah. No thick
steal
Instagram
porn
queens.
And bury it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not available at all times.
Yeah, forest porn.
I had buried porn in the 90s at one point.
There you go.
Yeah. You ever go dig it up, like a time capsule, see how it's doing?
No, it was like pages. We had found, somebody had like destroyed a porn mag near my elementary school, so my friends and I had collected some like saucy shreds, basically.
You're like, you're taping them back together like a puzzle, like a jigsaw?
Couple of them, yeah. We'd hidden them in my buddy's treehouse, and then like it was cocaine or something, we were just like, we gotta get it the fuck out of here, man. And we buried it near like the water filtration plant in Pancor, Quebec.
Okay.
And then never went back for it.
Well, I know what we're doing this weekend, guys.
Yeah, yep. Boys.
Digging up that porn.
I had a friend who would hide it in the top part of their barn, so we'd have to climb up a ladder and like look behind this squeaky board, and then there's pictures of naked ladies. And,
nice, yeah. Dude. Nice.
It's very exciting. Almost as exciting as the game Hack from 1980 to 1982.
Are you saying it's more exciting than stolen than secret porn? Because I would like to challenge that claim.
Well, like secret porn that you have lost and had to recreate yourself, Hack quickly evolved from a rough clone of Rogue into a game inspired by Rogue. It was perhaps the first true roguelike game, and it was really satisfying in the same way as Rogue were. And it had better monster AI, better level design, and more elaborate maze and dungeon generation algorithms.
Did it have visuals, or was it ASCII again?
Still ASCII. Like, if you can play it today, and they've made patches where you swap out the ASCII for tiles, and it looks more like the Apple version, I guess.
Can you get your ray tracing, like, RTX mod for NetHack?
Dude, I played my 3080 in just so I could play a game from 1982.
Install some shader packs and get the real good lighting, you know.
Oh, yeah, this doesn't look too bad.
So this is like one of the more advanced versions of it. I don't think this is the 1982 version, but it's still, that's NetHack.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like probably the late 80s version of it, which it looks a lot better than Roguelike, or than Rogue rather. You can kind of tell where the doors are. There's a bunch more interactions. Like in the screenshot you shared, you find a genie or a djinn, or how do you pronounce that?
A genie.
Genie. DJINNI.
Yeah.
If you free him, you get a free wish. So there's a lot of cool like role-playing interactions that can happen in NetHack that just weren't around in Rogue.
The player character in this, I think, is named Foosh the Peregrinator. So that's great.
Yeah, so before starting the game, you have to choose your race, role, sex, and alignment. Or you can allow it to just happen randomly.
Okay.
So you can be like a knight, a wizard, a rogue, or a priest. But there's also unusual rogues like archaeologist, tourist, or caveman.
Okay.
Caveman for me.
The way that you choose your role in alignment will choose which deity that you serve in the game and how other monsters react towards you, as well as character skills and attributes. It really is an RPG, but if you die, you just don't get to keep playing.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard like more hardcore D&D players that I've known will actually shred their character sheets if they die in their campaigns.
Yeah, I mean, in Dungeons & Dragons, the typical is like shredding seems like a melodramatic, like it feels more symbolic than anything, but yeah. Usually not playing your dead character is like the way it goes, especially like in D&D specifically. So there's a lot of tabletop role-playing games out there. D&D is obviously the most popular one and so the most relatable one. But in D&D specifically, like past a certain level, resurrection is almost too easy. Like it feels cheap. And like older versions of D&D, so D&D 1 and 2 and 3.5, it was harder typically. But I homebrew most of my 5e games to be like, no, you can't just like cast that one spell and burn up a diamond and then you come back into the campaign, because it just like it takes the stakes away. It's like the player, if you were a player and you're like, I know I can just get my character back, you'll be like, I will go talk to the dragon because I want to know what's going on. But if there's weight behind the decision to do it, it's just more interesting gameplay to me. Yeah.
That's totally why this like roguelikes took off, because there are stakes. When you die, you don't get to keep playing.
Yeah.
And in NetHack, people still play it. And sometimes you can play a character for months and then you just, RNG is really tough in NetHack. Like you can step in lava and it just kills your character outright and stuff like that.
I was more thinking it's because it's set in the medieval times. You get a toothache and die when you're 31.
Exactly. I got drank poopy water disease and I my teeth are falling out.
Yeah.
Can't eat anything. You gotta find mushy food. It's like, where's the mortar and pestle? Like
Oh, you got a toothache. Roll for wooden teeth and whiskey. You gotta have both of those if you want. Okay. All right.
Yeah, you gotta find an old battlefield and then you gotta pluck some teeth off dead soldiers, and you gotta find a dentist to put them in your mouth, and
yeah,
it's a big thing.
Rinse them in a dirty river on the way there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the way your win condition for NetHack is to make it all the way down and find the Amulet of Yendor and
again?
Offer it to your deity. Yeah, so it's based off of Rogue. So
okay.
He was trying to recreate Rogue, but he got really uncreative there.
Yeah.
He ended up making like a better version of Rogue in the end. There's like way more monsters. It's a lot more unique. It's more punishing as well.
I had imagined it as like a 1980s sci-fi game because it's called NetHack.
So yeah, like it was cyberpunk, just, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it probably worked just as well, too.
Yeah, I was reading through the Reddit stuff and I was like, what are the differences between NetHack and Rogue? And apparently NetHack's just very, like a lot harder.
Okay.
And since it's randomly distributed, like the levels and stuff, it's really punishing, and it's attracted like programmer types, especially in the 80s, because it was a problem to solve. So they always had to be thinking about their strategy in the same way they would think about like reprogramming something. Like, how do I overcome this challenge? And I think that's where the NetHack like background comes in.
Okay.
Because probably only programmers knew how to like launch games and play stuff in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, there were a bunch of geeks pushing up their glasses instead of, you know, talking to girls. We're just like, man, how do we remake Rogue?
We got to look at it like a computer programming problem, actually. The video game's not so different.
Yeah. So since they were so lonely, they also added in this game the accompaniment of a pet animal unless you opted out. So you get a kitten, a little dog, or if you start as a knight, you get a saddled pony.
Nice.
And pets grow from fighting. They can be changed for various means. And most of the other monsters also may be tamed using magic or food.
Oh, so cool.
There's a lot more. This is just Rogue Plus, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess you could say it's a bit of a roguelike, right?
You're right.
It's a little bit like that.
In the truest form. Like, this
Listen,
is
the German government hasn't decided what to call it yet, so let's pump the brakes.
Yeah. Next up is 1990, Angband.
Is this a Lord of the Rings game?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
How'd you know?
Because Aang Band is from Lord of the Rings.
You're a smart man.
Okay. What is Aang Band in Lord of the Rings?
I think one of the Nazgul.
Okay.
Like it's rules a, it. It's an evil place. I know that.
It's a fortress of Morgoth.
Yeah. There you okay. go.
Yeah. It's a dungeon crawling roguelike computer game derived from Umoria. Umoria and Moria is another one that's kind of in the family of roguelikes that I didn't really touch on too much.
Okay. Cousin sort of thing.
Yeah. It was J.R.R. Tolkien as well. And Aang Band just took Umoria and like expanded on it completely.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's, like we said, the Fortress of Morgoth. And it was originally created completely in ASCII, just like Rogue. Let me see if I can pull up a clip for you guys here. There we are.
Oh, I'm just getting a bunch of. I searched Aang Band, and I'm just getting a bunch of pictures of Tolkien-esque fortresses.
Yeah, yeah. So this one, it's like it looks a lot more like a grid, just like the previous one we were talking about, NetHack, where there's like a period for every grid, so you know where you're standing, and the periods are placed by your little at sign as you move. The monsters are like T or different letters again.
T for troll or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he's a hobbit rogue vagabond, I guess, is like a class and a subclass or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of classes in this one, which is really cool. And the goal of it is to survive 100 floor levels. So there's a lot of content here. And the game's meant to be extremely difficult. So even the other ones were difficult. This one amped it up even more.
Damn.
Okay.
So you start in a town where you can buy equipment and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a lot like the first Diablo, where you start in a town and then you can kind of set off and go down all of the levels to eventually get to Diablo.
Do you know which town it is? Does it say anywhere?
If there is a town, I didn't write it down.
Oh,
yeah.
It just on that screenshot, it just says town. So,
oh,
yeah.
I'm gonna guess it's just called town, the town of town.
Yeah, Tolkien, famous for his naming of villages and whatnot and creation of languages. You started town.
Look, I didn't realize how much roguelikes really just look like old RPGs, because it really looks like, I don't know, like an old Dragon Quest or something like that, where there's just no graphics. And yeah, roguelikes are really tied to RPGs more than I realized.
Well, they seem to just be D&D or Lord of the Rings up until this point, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
RPGs with permadeath, it seems like.
Yeah.
Fits the bill.
Yep. So you walk your way through this ASCII wonderland, you get objects, enchantments, your attack and defense power increases, you can neutralize specific attacks from other enemies, the player meets characters too, so there's like NPCs in this game, and you can find artifacts from Tolkien's Legendarium. And this is about resource management, this game. You have a certain amount of health points. You're going to have a certain amount of potions. It's about making it as far as you can without using too much and saving for the right times.
Okay. That definitely, like, I know we talked about Dark Souls earlier. That definitely has carried over, you know, into the decades into games of that genre.
Yeah. You can even see from the screenshot, there's like wooden torches that have 1500 turns of light and stuff like that. So if you're in a dark place, you have to be conscious of how much you're moving, and it would probably be very immersive for like the 1990s.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
1500 turns. Wow. That feels like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. This game was like meant to where you could beat the other games with 10 floors in like an hour or two. This game, you're meant to have like a campaign that lasted months and stuff that.
You say this would be really immersive. I think this came out 4 years after the NES and it still looks like this.
I definitely played like turn-based text games and stuff like that whenever I was younger too, even in the late 90s. So I enjoyed them a lot. So Aang Band was not available outside the University of Warwick until 1993.
Okay. Thanks.
Very specific. It was
for 3 years, it was just like on people's computers and being passed around.
Okay.
Yeah, they added undead creatures that, like, if you had past characters and die, you could run into your old characters, like, on a certain floor and stuff like that.
Oh, that's neat. That's an element in some fucking Ubisoft zombie game that came out a long time ago on the Wii U.
All right, time to find out what's behind this. Oh, my God. Penis Man? Is that you? Never thought I'd see you again. It's me, Vagina Man.
Oh no, you're a zombie now?
Yeah. So that's pretty much Angband. It was really popular in the roguelike genre, and it's considered like one of the more pure versions of a roguelike.
Okay. Yes. I mean, yeah. Something contained entirely to a British university would probably get the unearned reputation of being pure and very good. Yes.
The next one is Ancient Domains of Mystery. So this was from 1994, but they've actually re-released it on in 2017 on Steam. So there's an updated version. If you want to play this game, I'd say of any of the games, you play the 2017 version on Steam and it looks the best. And it looks like just basically a game of Dungeons and Dragons with graphic interface.
That's cool. And this kind of reminds me of like Dwarf Fortress, which was in development by like one guy for decades. And then finally, I think it's like officially released or something on Steam. You can buy it now.
Yeah. Dwarf Fortress. I knew some people who played it. I've never really played it. That's like an MMO as well, as much as I know.
Okay. I mean, so this one looks like a real video game. There's like sprites and a map and shit.
You can go back and play the ASCII version still in the late 90s, or you can play the 2017 version that just looks like a real game now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You be the judge.
This one actually had a story, so you weren't just like trying to find the thing that's at the bottom.
It wasn't just, what was it, the Amulet of Yondu or whatever? In every single one of the games.
Amulet of Yondare, right?
Yeah, the first
Yondare, yeah.
So this one was, it's been described as a NetHack from a mirror universe. It took NetHack and twisted into something unique with a heavy influence from Omega, which is another game, elements of Angband and Larn, which we talked about Angband, and computer RPGs mixed in for good measure. So it had a story. It actually had an overworld map, too, instead of just going down deeper and deeper. You have multiple towns, dungeons, clearings. There's this something that's evil. It's called Chaos, and it's like a sort of radiation energy that could cause mutations, both good and bad, which could in turn affect the story's outcome. So if you act in Chaos, then it can change the outcome of your story.
Huh. Okay, so it's like an early morality system, like within a game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Cool.
So there's like one of the examples I saw is like if you kill a cat near the beginning of the game, it just like messes up your gameplay, like you won't get the good ending anymore.
Okay, well that makes sense.
All for that cat.
Yep. So this one made decisions like even morality important too, not just should I pick up and use this item, like how should I complete this quest, should I do the good ending or the bad ending, and it's pretty advanced for 1994. Yeah.
Think of like older games that had a morality system that may have like multiple endings.
If you would have asked me last week, I would have said Fable. Like, I didn't realize they did this earlier.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
define older, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Email us if you guys know.
The earliest that you can think of off the top of your head. No cheating. No Googling. Okay, listeners? You gotta be honest. Honor system here.
Yeah. Do it from memory, from your friend's floppy disk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, during adventures, you get to explore many areas with multiple quests, and the quests can depend on character experience, level, alignment, lawful, neutral, chaotic. Alignment also affects NPC and deity interaction. There's a bunch of different classes. This one really starts to feel like an in-depth RPG. And
yeah, but still just D&D, though, as well. Like, it's still just like a D&D adaptation with like a homebrew story.
Totally.
Okay,
yeah.
Yep, that's pretty much it for this game. If you want to play one of these, I would say this is the best one to come back to since it's been remastered so well, and it just looks like you're playing single-player D&D, which looks fun.
Yeah,
the remaster of the other ones is good, but like I don't know, the capital T instead of the lowercase T, I don't really like the change in art style. So
yeah, that's it. Why did they have to italicize every single letter? You know,
like, yeah, what does it add?
I always have to play with my head cocked to the side I can read it.
Those damn slanted monsters, man.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the PS5 patch before I play Rogue again.
Yeah,
whenever your character starts to be weak, instead of an at sign, it's an italicized at sign.
Yeah.
It's kind of leading
he starts to fall over.
Yeah. So next up is the last one. It's from 1995 to 2005, and it's called Linley's Dungeon Crawl. It was actually okay. renamed
Putting Challenge.
Yeah. It was renamed Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup from 2006 onwards, and it is still being supported.
Nice.
Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup is a much worse title. I'm not
People mostly just call it Crawl.
Yeah. Oh, I've actually heard of that.
Okay.
I have also heard of crawling. It's something my nephew does from time to time.
I've heard of both the game and the movie.
But not the
I think the movie's about like a Korean alligator, though. It's one of those like South Korean movies.
Okay. Yeah, specifically a Korean alligator. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see the alligator's passport, but it's a Korean film about an alligator.
Is the alligator North Korean or South Korean?
It's a South Korean one.
Yeah. A South Korean alligator? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I kind of want to hear more about that.
Yeah. Let's go. Crawl the movie lore with Pete O'Donoghue here.
Yeah, it's a movie I have not seen. I'll do it.
To be fair, none of us have played Rogue.
Nope. That's true.
So, and we're doing okay.
The skirmisher here. Except you hit Jessica. Jessica is moderately wounded.
Jessica
she
hits
just
you
got lost
with a dwarven
dungeon.
Dagger. Jessica misses you. Aw, I miss you too, Jessica.
So I just shared a picture of Linley's Dungeon Crawl. It really looks like Chip's Adventure or whatever, like that game from
Chip's Challenges. Man, that was the shit. Windows 95,
yeah,
98 maybe. 98.
You just have single tiles everywhere, and you move around, and it's turn based. You can pick up items. The whole unique thing for this is you have points that go to an experience pool that are related to the skill you are using. A lot like RuneScape, I guess. To be better at chopping trees, you got to chop trees.
Okay. Yeah.
To be better
or Elder Scrolls, right? As well.
Yep.
To be better at concealing porn that you found torn up from your parents, you have to bury a lot of it by water treatment facility plants.
Exactly. You have to use your being an 8-year-old boy skill over and over and over again.
The,
then you get more skill
the more
than
you
hiding
use
porn.
It, the more you use it, the better you get.
Yep. So these are we've talked about the five games now. So Rogue itself. Then NetHack or Hack, as it was formerly known, Angband, Ancient Domains of Mystery or Atom, which is the one that you can still play today if you're interested, and Linley's Dungeon Crawl. So,
this
or
would be
just
the God
Crawl.
Hand, basically, the five fingers of the God Hand of roguelikes.
Exactly, and these are considered the purest of the pure of roguelikes, and then somehow we get to Hollow Knight, Enter the Gungeon, or even Diablo 3 from these ASCII art things.
We're going from the Al Cool down to the Colt 45 of roguelikes now.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go over what makes a roguelike, and this is the Berlin interpretation. So these are the snooty video game devs that just wanted to define everything, and this is how they defined it.
Just got to put everything in a box, an ASCII box, don't you? A box made out of vertical lines and dashes, huh?
Yeah, so the canon for roguelikes is Atom, Angband, Crawl, NetHack, and Rogue. And this list that I'm about to say, it determines how roguelike a game is, and it's inspired from those five. Missing some points does not mean the game is not a roguelike, and possessing some points does not mean the game is a roguelike. So it's very up to interpretation. So it's split into two things, high value factors and low value. So I'll go over the high value first. There's random environment generation. So basically, if it's proceduralized, then that makes it more roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
Permadeath, very important. Turn-based, which is not one that you see. It kind of really feels like the old roguelike is turn-based, but nowadays it's a lot more just reactive.
Turn-based games are so few and far between now. Like, even Final Fantasy is not turn-based anymore. And that was like...
Yeah,
exactly. So, I guess time is... It's still like you have X amount of time and you can do things and your opponent can do other things, but it's not so clear-cut as I made my move and they made their move.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were probably turn-based ASCII games because of the technology available, not because it's like, oh no, this is one of the tenets of the, this is our interpretation of what a roguelike is.
Yeah. So in 2008, when they made this, they still believed that turn-based is one of the big factors in being roguelike.
Ah, yes. Old men still making outdated decisions in Berlin.
Equally outdated, grid-based. So the world is represented by a uniform grid of tiles.
Okay.
Is
Minesweeper a roguelike?
Actually, after we get through this, let's rate Mines.
Because I think it checks all three of those boxes. Permadeath, technically so turn-based, because there's only one point, like it's just your turns, right? And then there is a grid base.
Okay, hold that thought. Put
I'm
a pin in it.
I'm holding
So complexity. The game has enough complexity to allow several solutions to common goals. So this is attained by providing enough item and monster, item interactions. So like you can get the final item by talking your way through it, let's say, or killing the final monster, or maybe finding a different item that makes the monster run away, like Ganondorf with the fishing rod, or who knows. Resource management. You have limited resources, you got to manage them. Hack and slash. So killing lots of monsters is an important part of a roguelike. The game is player versus world. There are no monster relations like enmities or diplomacy, but that I don't really think is that important.
Oh, amenities?
No, enmities.
Enmities?
E-N-M-I-T-I-E-S is, I believe, the word he was going for.
That's right. I've never seen it before. It just came up.
It's like just being hostile.
Okay.
Okay.
And then the last one of the important ones is exploration and discovery. So there should be an element of exploring. You shouldn't know where to go at all times.
Okay.
So, and then the low value factors are single player. Monsters are similar to players, so rules that apply to the player should apply to the monsters as well. Tactical challenge. You should learn about the tactics before you make any significant progress. So they're saying you should die if you don't know how to be tactical.
Yeah.
ASCII display, which is
fuck
so
you.
Outdated. Dude, imagine Hades but in ASCII,
right?
Yeah. Well, so this is like if we still wrote things in Latin just because old council decided that, so it should be.
Yeah.
It has to be in a dungeon. That one I find is kind of outdated as well.
Also very dungeon, vague.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think it still applies, is because dungeon is just like it has to be a certain environment that is like regenerated. So like whether it's a space station or a mine or just a traditional dungeon, it's all
a brothel.
Functionally identical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last small thing is numbers. That numbers are used to describe the character, hit points, attributes, and are deliberately shown. So like D&D. You should know your strength is at 14 and your charisma is at 12 or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that's all of the things. And there's controversy about it. There's an article called Screw the Berlin Interpretation where Darren Gray calls it inaccurate and out of date and unrepresentative of a vibrant and open genre. Like, I think Hades is a roguelike, but it might not meet every bit of
Hollow Knight. Definitely is not. It's a Metroidvania, which is the thing that I was thinking of whenever we started to go into this conversation.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's really doesn't meet a lot of them, but it could be a roguelite in the way that if you die, you can lose everything, but you still maintain some of your progress, right?
No, you don't save everything. You just lose
your money.
Yeah.
Geode, and you can even get it back if you kill your spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Hollow Knight would rate very low on this, so we could probably call it a rogue light where it has like some elements but it's really not anything, or just a Metroidvania,
but it's not randomly generated either. It's no aspect of that other than if you get killed by your ghost you lose your geo.
I guess it is exploration based, like you won't know your way around until you get around, but
you have to die to like you have to fight some bosses that you don't know their patterns, and then you die and then you learn their patterns.
Yep. So let's do a Minesweeper. Let's see how it would rate.
All right.
Should we like add numbers to each one and give it a score, or just say yes or no the whole way?
I don't know. Do they have like a rating system?
It's based out of 60, but the numbers don't quite line up to what I... There's 9 in the first category and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the second category.
Okay.
I don't know how they get 60 out of that. Anyways, let's just say yes or no.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll say,
so.
Wait, yeah, sure. Let's go yes, no.
Random environment generation, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, the mines are always in different places.
They're always random.
Right. So we're 1-for-1. Permadeath, when you die, you got to start over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Minesweeper, it's 2 for 2.
Coming up hot.
Turn-based, each command corresponds to a single action or movement. Yeah. The game is not sensitive to time. You can take your time to choose your action.
Yeah, because it's not sensitive to time unless you're going for a high score.
Yeah. Right.
Or a speed run, so.
Yep, so that's 3. Grid-based.
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Non-modal. So movement, battle, and other actions take place in the same mode. Things that break this is like stopping to go to a shop, or like in Final Fantasy where it zooms into battle mode and then goes back to open world. This is all one mode, I'd say.
There's just one mode in Minesweeper, the Minesweeper mode.
It's 5 for 5.
I'd say.
Complexity. There has to be several solutions to the same goal.
No, there's just one way to beat each grid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess you can come at...
You can get there in different ways.
Yeah.
You don't have to put a flag on a mine if you're living on the edge, right?
Yeah. True.
And if you see a 3 there and you can't be certain like which 3 are the mines, sometimes you have to build around the other way to find out.
Yeah, true.
Let's give it a no. Let's be stickler.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it has to be a 60 out of 60 roguelike Minesweeper, but we're doing pretty well so far. So
we're what, 5 out of 6 now?
Yeah.
Resource management. You have limited resources, food, healing potions. So no, that one, no, not so much. No.
You got all the flags.
Unlimited flags. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unlimited 5, flags, unlimited question marks.
Hack and slash, so killing lots of monsters.
I'm gonna say no.
Also, yeah, probably
if anything,
not.
You're trying to prevent death by pointing out where the mines are.
Yeah.
So 5 out of 8, exploration and discovery.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So that is 6 out of 9.
Or 6 out of 9, yeah.
6 out of 9, so we got a 66% on, and those are the important ones. It's single player? Yes.
Yes.
Monsters are similar to players, probably not, because there's mines versus people.
Sure. I'll give you that one.
Unless you are a mine, and that was they never said that the whole time.
Yeah, or there's...
On the internet, no one knows you're a mine.
Or there's a hidden monster who's the one planting all these mines, and you're trying to rebuke them.
ASCII display, it might as well be.
Well, I mean, we gave it grid-based. I don't think it's ASCII.
Yeah. No. So it's 0 out of 3 for these.
One of the symbols is a question mark, which is kind of ASCII, right? But
yeah. It has to be set in a dungeon, so 0 out of 4.
Well, or like it, we said.
Well, who's to say where the mines are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe this rogue government that put down all these mines without telling everybody is trying to blow up a bunch of bats or whatever in a mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's to say?
And the numbers are used to describe the character. It's not used to describe the character, but numbers are very important.
There are numbers in the game.
You have 1 HP. Yeah, you have 1 HP in Minesweeper, though.
I'd be willing to give it to us. So
I'm giving it to Minesweeper. Minesweeper, officially a roguelike. You heard it here first, folks.
Yep. It honestly, compared to some other games, more so than Hollow Knight, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Way closer than Hollow Knight.
Yeah.
So, I'm not willing to give Hollow Knight anything on the rogue Google-like.
Yeah, just to show you how far like we've kind of strayed from the genre, though, and like still call things roguelites, I think Hades is a roguelike. Like, to me, it definitely is. It has random environment generation. It has permadeath. It's not turn-based. It's not really grid-based.
It doesn't have permadeath. That's so. And what I had in my head before we did this podcast, what my definition always was roguelike is procedurally generated permadeath, and roguelite was procedurally generated no permadeath. Like, that was just how I split them.
So yeah. That's how people on the internet do it, is rogue light is you retain some progress. So you spend your darkness in Hades, so you have upgrades that last forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But permadeath could be really just like, I guess your character doesn't die, but you do have to start over from the beginning every time you die.
Yeah, but like, so like Spelunky 2, yep. you like die and you don't get anything. There's no mirror of darkness. You don't get to upgrade weapons. It's just what you find on each individual run. You always start at the exact same point. Which is how I always what I always considered a rogue like. And then if you start at in the same room and like, you know, go through the same worlds, but you get to retain something and get to make progress each time you die, I always called that a rogue light.
Okay. So the way that these guys define it, roguelike is anything that you think it meets enough of these criteria, mm-hmm. and roguelites are the ones that meet enough, but you don't feel that it's a fully fledged roguelike game.
You don't feel right about it.
Yeah, it's very subjective.
Yeah.
So just morally, the UN would be all over the Berlin Council if they, they handed out too many genres.
Yeah, I love how they call it like the Berlin interpretation. Like it's like this big important thing.
Well, it does sound like something from like the 1600s.
Yeah, and it was in 2008. Anyway, to show you how far roguelike has kind of gone off from its original form. I want to get through all of them for Hades. So. Random environment generation, yes. Permadeath. Yeah. Permadeath, sort of, but no. Like, you do die, you have to start over.
There's death, not permadeath.
Yeah, you start over from the first...
Get stronger.
Yeah. You start over from the first level when you die is, like, one of the things in permadeath.
Okay.
Okay. So it's, partial like, kind of half.
Partial
points, yeah. Turn-based, definitely not.
Nope.
Fuck nope.
Grid-based,
nope.
Like, if you broke it down to the smallest scale ever, maybe. But...
I mean, that's anything, though.
So far, we're, like, 1.5. Non-modal. So, actually, that one is good, because you don't, like, switch to battle mode versus... You kind of have the town versus the battle place, though, so...
Because you've got one area where the gameplay takes place that is non-permanent, because you... I mean, you retain your upgrades, but like you don't keep everything you get in a run. And then when you're back at home, that is all permanent. Like your deaths are canon and everybody remembers chatting with you and shit and they advance. There, it's like two bubbles that exist separately, whereas the combat itself is kind of alone, right?
Yeah, I have no idea what modal means.
So yeah, like here, the way that they say it, it's like every action should be available at any point in the game. Violations to this are Adam's overworld or Angbad's crawl and crawl's shops. So like the fact that when you open the shop menu, it could be a break to this, but I'd say it's about half points like the other one.
So it's like, because like in Hades, you can't swing your sword when you're in the house of your father. Like, you can only it when you're out in the battle place, so.
So it's probably... Yeah,
you get grounded otherwise, and it's fucking game over.
Yeah.
Okay, so far we have random environment generation and, like, half points for permadeath, and that's it.
Yeah.
Complexity, you can have several solutions to common goals. Probably not in this one.
Very linear.
You gotta kill things.
Kill things, farm ambrosia, farm nectar, just keep giving it to people until they like you more. Like, there's not even... alternate ways to go about that, right?
In the third act, you can fight the bull before actually fighting him in the final fight, but he just starts with like 20% less health, so it's not even a change in how you solve the problem.
No, he doesn't. He starts full health when you fight him with Theseus.
Not if you have fought him as the mini boss while you're in that level.
Really? I've beaten that game like over 50 times. I've beaten Hades like over 50 times. I've never noticed that.
That's something I noticed. Whenever you like run into him as a mini boss, when you fight him again, and you'll get a different voice line, he'll give you some sort of salute to respect.
Yeah. I mean, they give you like unique voice lines every time you meet them, right?
Yeah. Anyways, next one is resource management. You do have to met resource management.
Your HP is a resource.
Yeah, you have ambrosia, you have darkness, and you can trade the resources. So I'll say that is. Okay.
Because you get HP and the money you spend with Karen, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different resources.
Yeah.
So now we're at like 2.5. Hack and slash, you definitely kill a lot of monsters. So 3.5. Yeah. Exploration and discovery. I'd say there is exploration and discovery.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yep.
So we have like a 4.5 out of 9, where Minesweeper had a 6 out of 9. So we can see how
Minesweeper's the better game.
But
so
Minesweeper
just shut down, right?
I mean, Minesweeper, we said, was very much roguelike, though. We said it here first on the podcast.
Yep. So this just goes to show you guys, roguelikes really have evolved. Where they came from is basically like these RPG, turn-based, ASCII art relics at this point, and Rogue, it made the permadeath popular and it gave the style of game, but nowadays it's a completely different landscape, and roguelikes can be a lot of different things, and I think that's a good thing.
You know what just popped into my head that's actually a lot closer to a roguelike probably than fucking Hades is? XCOM. It's grid-based. The missions are all random. Permadeath on your entire squad, who are all random.
Yep.
I think a strategy RPG would actually fit roguelike definitions better than a roguelike these days.
It operates entirely on dice rolls.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do get permanent character progression. Like, as soon as you upgrade to laser weapons, you guys keep them forever. But, like, if all your dudes die, they're useless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would meet a lot of them.
I don't know. Like, the player is kind of in a weird position with XCOM because, like, you say permadeath, all your guys are permadeath, but it's actually when your whole squad dies, that's permadeath. Like, when you lose the game, that's permadeath, right? Not one of your guys getting permadeath is kind of different.
No, there is a doomsday clock that is
exactly
separate to that, but...
yeah. I guess there's a couple levels to it, but I think it fits it closer than let's say, Hades.
Yeah.
It's only... and. It's more a roguelike if you play in Iron Man, right? Like, if you don't play in Iron Man, then it's less.
Yeah, I don't have the constitution to do that. Exactly.
If you don't play in Iron Man, then Firaxis will go and reprogram the game so you can't use your save files or something.
Anyways, that is all I have for the history of roguelikes. So how different they are from back then to what they are today, and now you know a little bit more about the games that created it.
That's true.
Yeah, and we also have like you have a checklist to judge games by in your Steam reviews, so it's perfect.
Yeah, this one was like a little drier than let's say my SCP joke in or my Earthworm Jim episodes, but I had a lot of fun researching it.
Yeah,
and
thanks for that, James. You got anything you want to plug for the end of the episode?
Just check us out at loreboys.com/about and get in the Discord. We have some new friends joining all the time, and there's a lot of chat that goes on there, and even a Minecraft server that you might like to join.
Yeah, another one. What about you, Pete? Anything you want to talk about, plug this week, shill?
Check out at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram and send us an email. We were like, hey, let's do a mailbag because we got like a big shotgun blast of emails. Like, yeah, we'll save these, and then. Then you guys clammed up, and I don't know what we did, but just don't be afraid. Send pigeons for all I care. We all work from home, so just do it. That's contact@loreboys.com is the best way to do that, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Or like James said, you could just get at us on Discord and be like, hey, I want to ask you this question, and we might just be like, hey, we're going to save this to read on air. But most of the time, we're just chilling and chatting. Somebody asked us a question that we said we would read on air, and then I read it 2 weeks later and completely forgot we were going to say we said that, so then I just answered it there anyway. It's the Wild West over there. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like the show, leave us a review on whatever podcast app you're using, and tell your friends and family. It helps a lot. We're growing every day, and it's an exciting thing to watch. If you want to support us financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. Big thank you to all our patrons out there for keeping the dream alive, as it were. And for anybody who doesn't trust Patreon, doesn't believe in Patreon, we have always offered Loreboys Prime, which is our own kind of patron service where you can send us something and we'll give you something in return for it. So this week we are collecting hard drives and USB sticks and whatever kind of memory you guys can get your hands on. I'm plumb out of hard drive space at the moment. And really, it's from the show. So what we're offering something very special in return. The show is ending, obviously, because we're out of hard drive space. So until we can get more. But I'm going to try and recreate the show purely from memory, okay? And I have a couple things I remember about my co-hosts, Jamie and Peter. And I'm hoping that I can find someone similar enough to them that I can use them in my new show, which we're going to call Galaxy Network. And that'll be the recreation of the Lore Boys podcast. So if you think you could do a good Jamie or a good Peter, I have a vague memory of what they're like. So please send in your auditions with a USB stick and you'll have a chance to become the next Galaxy Network host.
Dude, I only have 26 letters and a horrible AI, so you guys can definitely get ahead of me.
I'm exactly like that, but with more color.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just more color. They're both grid-based. They're both Peter's modal, Jamie's non-modal. And I think that constitutes a Lore Boys, a Galaxy
Lore
Network
Boys.
Out.
Yeah, exactly.
Roguelike, roguelight, roguelike, roguelite, yellow leather, leather, leather.
Red la la, red la 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 la.
Rogue yellow, yellow rogue. Rogue yellow, yellow rogue.
Okay. Soundcheck starts now. It's already started. It's begun. It's 3 seconds in. What are you going to do?
In 2008, bum players and developers bought a boo barrow definition.
A boo barrow definition. What a what? What definition?
Pete's got to say something.
I was just waiting for, I mean, I wasn't going to talk over Ethan on the sound check. That's for the show. The show has to sound worse than the test.
Yeah, but, well, no, it's good that we talk over each other a little bit. It's good that we get solo samples and then also talking over each other, because you know we're going to talk over each other on the show.
Yeah.
Here we go. We got all excited thinking we got it in a one shot, but now it's taken us about 10, huh?
Mummy curse.
Yeah, it's better to figure out now than later. You only have one... one screen now too, don't you?
That was such like a scat man start of that sentence. Like it's actually gonna start it now. We're live. It's Saturday night. Sorry.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.